he was incredibly coachable. He was humble. He was all in. And you won't find a human being on the planet that loves the game of basketball as much as he did. Holding someone accountable is something you do for them. It's not something you do to them. It doesn't always feel that way in the moment when someone's holding you accountable, but what they're doing is they're giving you a gift. When I met Kobe in 2007, he said something to me that changed my life and my perspective forever.
Welcome to the Beyond Speaking podcast from Premier Speakers Bureau, featuring in-depth conversations with the world's most in-demand keynote speakers.
Hi, I'm Brian Lord. Welcome to the Beyond Speaking podcast. Our guest today is Alan Stein Jr., who has this incredible life where he gets to work with the best people ever at their respective jobs, specifically the NBA. So people like Steph Curry and Kobe. You've got great Kobe stories, Coach K, so many of them. And he talks from an applicable standpoint, talking about organizational change, culture, how to deal with burnout. I know one of the things that's really big right now is quiet quitting, and you have that in the NBA too on these different teams. So those are some of the things we're going to get into while we're here. So Alan, thank you so much for joining us on the Beyond Speaking podcast.
My pleasure. Big fan of you, big fan of the show, so this will be fun.
Thanks. Yeah, it's kind of weird to have somebody say they're a fan of the show. We'll take it though.
Yeah, absolutely.
So anyway, you know, how did you get your foray into working with these top NBA and college players?
Well, the short version is basketball was my first love. Mm-hmm. So I fell in love with the game at 5 years old, and I'm so thankful that here 40 years later, basketball is still a major pillar of my life. I was able to play collegiately it was Elon College at the time. It's now Elon University in North Carolina.
Yeah.
And while I was at Elon, I started to develop an equal love for the training side, for strength, conditioning, fitness, mindset, nutrition. So when I graduated in the late 90s, I figured what could be better than taking my original love of basketball and combining it with this newfound love of performance training. So I became a basketball performance coach, and I moved back to DC, which is where I'm from, mm-hmm. and was able to work at two very renowned high school programs that have produced dozens of NBA players, Kevin Durant being the most notable, and got a chance to work with some really legendary and remarkable players and coaches. That opened up doors to do work at Nike and Jordan Brand and USA Basketball, and that's where I had opportunities to work events for guys like LeBron, Kobe, Steve Nash, and mm-hmm. I'm very observant by nature, so I was soaking in all of the lessons and routines and disciplines and mindset that these elite players had. So when I decided to make the leap over to the corporate side to become a keynote speaker, I just decided I would take all of those lessons and teach folks how to apply them to their businesses, and I'm having an absolute blast doing it.
Mm-hmm. Who was the first, like, sort of great player or coach that you got to observe and, like, follow around, take notes?
The most notable actually was KD, Kevin Durant, when he was 14 years old is when I first had a chance to meet him. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was obvious at that time that he had all of the raw talent and skills to be potentially a really great player. But what he lacked was the physical strength and the explosiveness and the size. And since that's what I specialized in, I just had this feeling that we were kind of meant to connect. And I started working him out when he was 15 years old. Mm-hmm. And he was incredibly coachable. He was humble. He was all in. And you won't find a human being on the planet that loves the game of basketball as much as he did. So we developed a really nice relationship. And it's been fun to watch him progress ever since. And if you would have asked me back then if I thought he would end up being one of the greatest scorers that the game has ever seen, there's no way I would have predicted that. But now that I see that he is, I'm actually not surprised. Uh-huh. Because he had all of those, you know, raw materials to be great, and he's deserved everything he's earned.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, by the way, for those watching and listening, a fun thing to do is go through like articles on like ESPN or The Athletic or whatever, and then play kind of like Where's Waldo, but with like Alan Stein Jr. So it is kind of fun to go back. So I was reading an article about that. And were you the one who said, I'm going to put this kid with a mentor? Like you kind of have different levels of mentorship. Like when you're setting someone up for success, like putting him with this super hardworking kid as his roommate. Was that your idea or part of it?
Yeah, well, mentorship is huge. I mean, I'm a huge believer in mentorship. I'm a huge believer in coaching, you know, and I come from the school of thought that everybody needs a coach. Mm-hmm. No matter your age, no matter your industry, no matter your business, everybody needs a coach because, you know, coaches motivate and inspire. They teach, they hold you accountable, they push you, they challenge you. And we all need that. I mean, the first thing I did when I decided to become a corporate keynote speaker was hire a speaking coach. Mm-hmm. The first thing I did when I decided to write my first book was hire a writing coach. When I found myself not making great financial decisions in my life, I hired what I call my money coach, you know, basically a wealth advisor. So I'm a big believer in that coaching, and I always tried to plant those seeds very early with everyone that I worked with.
Mm-hmm. Who instilled that in you?
My parents, for sure. So both of my parents were elementary educators. My mom was a first grade teacher for 30 years. My father started as an elementary school teacher and then worked his way up to administration and being a principal. So mm-hmm. I've always had a very strong respect and appreciation for teaching and coaching and mentors. And that's what I strive to be in my own life. You know, there's lots of folks that would like to follow the path that I've already blazed, and I want to do everything I can to help, you know, share ideas and concepts and strategies with them. And then I still lean heavily on a series of mentors and coaches because I'm not anywhere close to getting where I'd like to be.
Sure. So you've moved, let's pull back to, you know, you're helping out this 14, 15-year-old Kevin Durant. What's the next step for you from that point?
So then I got invitations to start working some events for Nike and Jordan Brand. And at that time, Nike decided to create what they called their Summer Skills Academies. Mm-hmm. AAU was becoming really prominent, and that was really focused heavily on kids playing games. And Nike said, we want to go back to teaching the game the right way and doing fundamentals. But they knew they needed some type of hook in order to get the players to buy in. So they decided to create these camps around their signature athletes, which at the time, this is 2007, mm-hmm. was Kobe Bryant, LeBron James, Vince Carter, Steve Nash, Paul Pierce. So they built these camps around each of those signature players. And I had a chance to work each of those camps, meet and observe each of those players. And that was really a changing point for me, because when I met Kobe in 2007, he said something to me that changed my life and my perspective forever. I watched one of his really early morning workouts and was surprised that he just kept drilling down on very basic drills. Like, he was just doing the fundamentals over and over. Now, he was doing them at an unparalleled level of effort and focus, but the drills he were doing were similar drills that I'd done with middle school age players. And mm-hmm. when I had a chance to talk to him later that day at camp and ask him about that, he said the reason he was the best player in the world was because he never got bored with the basics. Mm-hmm. And that's when this light bulb went off in my mind, and I finally realized that just because something is basic, it doesn't mean it's easy. People often use those words as if they're synonyms, but they're not interchangeable. They mean very different things. And that's really become the foundation of everything I teach and preach on stage or on page, is we have to work on mastering the basics and the fundamentals, that's the foundation to which the rest of the house is built. And that's really what I do with the businesses I work with, is get them to clarify the basics and the fundamentals, work relentlessly on those towards mastery during the unseen hours, and that's how you'll increase everything that a business wants to increase. Mm-hmm. More sales, more customer loyalty, more cohesion and collaboration. Like, everything a business wants stems from their ability to master the basics. And that was all just from an impromptu lesson I learned from Kobe.
Yeah, and you tried to actually beat Kobe.
Tried to beat him to the gym, which I would think that getting to the gym at 3:30 in the morning would be early enough to beat him to the gym, but I was still 30 minutes late, yeah, which was just a great reminder. And one of the cool things, a lot of people don't know this, they've heard how he would do these early morning legendary workouts, but in another conversation, he explained to me why. He said that even the most dedicated NBA players will come in the off season and they'll work out twice a day. They'll come in mid-morning and work out for 2 to 3 hours. They'll go home, get some lunch, rest, and they'll come back early afternoon for 2 to 3 hours. And he said, if I only do what everybody else in the NBA is doing, I'll never, you know, be able to beat them. So I need to do more than they're doing. So he figured if he got up and got his first workout at 4 a.m., when he's coming home from workout number one, his competition is coming into the gym for workout number one. Mm-hmm. So he's always one step ahead. And he said, you know, that might not make a huge difference in one off season, but if I do that every single year over the span of a long career, he said, I'll be untouchable. No one will ever catch me because I'll simply outwork them. And that was a powerful lesson as well. Now, one of the most important things that I tell folks is I don't want the lesson to be that more is better. I'm not here to tell a CEO that instead of working 14-hour days, you should be working 18-hour days, because I don't believe more is better. Mm-hmm. I believe better is better. But what Kobe did was he figured out a strategic way for him to have a competitive advantage, and he went all in. And that is a lesson that I want folks to pull from. Find where you can have a competitive advantage and make massive investments in that.
Mm-hmm. So what is Allenstein Jr.'s 4 a.m.?
My four. So I've always been an early riser. And even when I was a kid, I mean, I'm, you know, a product of the 80s and the 90s. And it's funny, my parents laugh. I used to wake up super early on Saturday mornings before the Saturday morning cartoons even started. And I'm just like ready for the day to get going. Now, with that said, I also go to bed fairly early. I'm pretty much worthless around 9:30, 10 o'clock at night every night. Yeah. But I believe in getting a great jump on the day. For me, when I wake up, I try and do something that engages me physically, mentally, and emotionally every day before I actually start my traditional work day. Mm-hmm. And I run my life as if I'm still a competitive athlete. You know, when I have a keynote, I have a pre-speaking routine the same way a Kobe Bryant would have a pre-game routine. Mm-hmm. And I love structure, I love consistency, I love routine. That's how I operate best. So my morning routine is what allows me to kind of to set the foundation for the day. And I went through that morning routine today so that I could be my best to be with you today.
That's awesome. Well, one of the things that a lot of companies right now are dealing with is quiet quitting, which is people only doing the bare minimum to get by. What advice would you give a leader or someone in an organization who is having to deal with a lot of quiet quitting?
Well, the very first thing is you have to make sure that your people know that you care. I mean, that is the foundation. If I had to tell you my secret to being successful in the basketball training space, my players knew that I cared about them as a human being first and as an athlete second. I didn't care about KD just because he was a good basketball player. I cared about him as a human being and wanted to help him reach all of his goals and dreams. It just happened he was also an excellent basketball player. So caring has to be number one. And when you care, you'll increase buy-in and believe in, and you'll increase engagement. Well, how do you show people you care? You invest time with them. You give them your full attention. You have a fascination and a curiosity. You check in with them. You know, now I realize too that this is different among different businesses. If you're the CEO of a 10,000 person organization, you can't go from employee to employee and check in with them every single day. But you can create a system where your managers and your directors and those other leaders in your organization can do that. Mm-hmm. People need to feel valued. They need to feel appreciated, they need to feel respected, they need to feel safe, they need to feel included, they need to feel like their work is making a contribution to the greater good, they need to stay connected to the purpose of the organization, and ultimately that's what a leader's job is. And it's funny because sometimes when I talk to leaders, understandably they say, you know, Alan, I don't have time for that. And I say, but that is the work. Like, what do you mean you don't have time? That is the job of a leader, is to elicit buy-in and believe in, make everyone feel that their role is important in making a difference. And when you can do that at a high level, you'll see quiet quitting almost evaporate entirely.
Mm-hmm. How do you do that authentically? Because like with NBA players, like you're dealing with them, everybody wants something from them. And they feel, but that not just with them, sometimes like, oh, my boss is only being nice to me because they want something. So how do you do that in an authentic way?
You give. You give of your time, you give of your resources. You know, it's when you know that you're reaching out to someone that might be a little bit guarded for those very understandable reasons, my whole goal is just to add value. You know, one of the things that I wish I would have learned this earlier, I was fairly hard-headed in my 20s and 30s and probably very self-centered. Like I wanted what was best for me. And over the last several years in particular, especially since I had children, I've learned to flip that. And I'm much more concerned with what others want. I'm much more concerned with pouring into others. You know, I've learned that when I can shift the focus off of what I want from people and shift it to what I want for people, it's an absolute game changer. And ultimately, things will come back to you. I do believe in kind of that cosmic karma, that if you do everything in your power to be of service and add value and help everyone else, things will naturally just be fluid for you. So if I was an employer, I would want to make sure that my team knew that, look, I'm here to serve you. This is not about me, this is about you. How can I help support you so that you can maximize your role within our organization and make a maximum contribution so we can all get where we're trying to go? Mm-hmm. And whenever I'm trying to meet someone, you know, for the first time that I believe could add value to my life, the first thing I do is, how can I add value to theirs? Is there something that I've read, watched, or listened to that they might find interesting, and I can just send that to them? No strings attached. There is no expectation of getting anything in return. I just believe in constantly adding value. And one of the quotes I live by, and this is not an Alan Stein Jr. original, I don't know who came up with this or I'd give them proper attribution, and that is, a candle loses nothing by lighting another candle. So if you were to ask me what my ultimate purpose was, it's to light as many candles as I can. And by doing so, mine won't shine any dimmer, but it's all about being able to spread that value. And I came up, you know, this life philosophy in my early 40s. I wish I would have come up with it earlier, but I think that was just kind of my path.
Sure. Well, you know, speaking of, you know, coming up with things earlier and being influenced by people, you have a pretty interesting story about meeting Coach K. Mike
yes.
Krzyzewski, yeah.
Well, as you can probably tell from the Jordans, I am a Duke fan, and that is because I am a diehard Coach K fan. When I was graduating from Elon, I read his first book, Leading with the Heart, and it absolutely reframed and changed how I viewed leadership, how I viewed teamwork and cohesion. And I've probably read that book a dozen times since. So I immediately became a Coach K and thus a Duke fan. And because I was able to work at two different really renowned high schools in the DC area, Coach K and the Duke staff were constantly coming to our gyms to watch players because they were recruiting players. And the first time that he came to our gym, I mean, I didn't know he was coming that day. So I thought it was going to be a normal day of practice. And I walk in the gym and I'm standing, you know, this close to basically my idol, you know, a coaching legend. And he was kind enough to talk to me for 10 minutes before practice started.
Wow.
And, you know, what's funny is I don't remember a single word that either one of us said, but I will never forget how he made me feel. Coach K did exactly what you're doing right now. Mm-hmm. He had a great eye contact and a warm smile and positive body language. He had a fascination and was asking me question after question about my training philosophy, my family. He showed a very genuine interest in me. He made me feel like I was the most important person in that gym. I wasn't. The kid he was recruiting was the most important, but for 10 minutes, he made me feel like I was. Well, my parents raised me very old school. They raised me that when someone goes out of their way to do something nice for you, you handwrite them a thank you note. Mm-hmm. So I went home that night and I wrote him a thank you note, telling him how amazing it was to finally meet him and how much I appreciated his time. I put a stamp on it, sent it to Durham, North Carolina. And I figured that would be that. Well, 3 weeks later, I get a note back from Coach K. I don't have it on me, I actually have it in my bag, but I got a letter back from Coach K that ultimately said the same thing. Alan, it was so nice to meet you. I enjoyed learning about you. You're doing a great job, always rooting for you. And that just absolutely blew my mind. I mean, you're talking about at that time, the most iconic coach on the planet, the face of college basketball, mm-hmm. and someone who certainly has an in-demand, busy schedule, and yet he made the time to return my handwritten note. Yeah. And because of that, two things. One, I wake up every single day with an attitude of gratitude to tell as many people as I possibly can how much I appreciate them and the work that they're doing. But it's also the reason that I am personally relentless about returning voicemails, emails, text messages, and social DMs, because I figure if one of the most iconic coaches in the history of all of team sports can make the time to handwrite me a note back, you better believe I can return your email. You better believe I can call you back. So that really was a life changer for me. And I've had a chance to meet him several times since. And one of the cool things is, you know, I tell that story from stage in many of my programs, and I have had so many people come up after and say, you're not gonna believe this. I got a letter from Coach K also. This is something that he made it a priority to do. And what he did was, I found this out from his longtime executive assistant. He would block off time every Monday morning. No meetings, nothing. He would block off time to simply write handwritten notes to as many people as he could. He systematized and created a process for doing that. He didn't just leave it to, yeah, I'll eventually write Brian back. He said, no, this is going to be a block of time where I'm going to do that. And you're talking about a man who coached for as long as I've been breathing. Imagine how many handwritten notes he's put out into the world and what a difference they make. And that just, it absolutely blew my mind. And he may never even know that he had that type of impact on me, but I know it and I try and pay it forward.
What do you think the sacrifice is to do that? Because whenever you have, because you talk about time being so incredibly important, you know, the hourglass, you don't know how much time you have left. What do you sacrifice in order to do that sort of thing?
Well, it's not as much a sacrifice, it's just about your priorities. And you have to decide what do you believe is most important, and then you need to learn to structure your day and your routine based on what you believe is most important. And the cool part about that, that's not for me to judge what you feel is most important, that's what you need to figure out, and that's what I need to figure out as well. And Coach K figured out, of all of the things that he has to do, I mean, first and foremost, he's trying to pursue a national championship every single year. Mm-hmm. So with that, you've got recruiting, you've got workouts, you've got practices, you've got film sessions, you've got relationships with your coaches, relationships with the members of your team, but he also has to do stuff with, you know, the donors of the school and the athletic director, and then he's got media appearances. And of course, at his level, you know, He's got people that want him to do speaking engagements and do commercials. He has all of this, and yet he decided that at least for 1 hour a week, what's most important is outreach and thanking people for that support. So he systematized that and create, and I that's what I try and do in my life. I try and say, here are the core values and standards that I believe are most important, and can I build my life and my schedule around those? And most of the time, I think I do a decent job, but then like others, there's times where that is a struggle and it's challenging. So for me, it's never about perfection. It's just about progress. And when I'm being self-reflective and I look at myself and go, okay, Alan, here's an area where you're starting to slip, you need to do better, I just refocus the lens on that area. And then inevitably, there'll be another area that will start to feel some slippage. So it's kind of evergreen and esoteric. It's not a perfection game, it's a progress game. So for me, can I be better in 2024 than I've been in 2023 in every area of my life? That's the only game that I'm playing.
Speaking of people who are constantly trying to find ways to improve, one of the other great people you've worked with from basketball is Steph Curry. Like, how did that relationship come about, and what was kind of your give and take with him?
Well, the first time I met him was at the Kobe Bryant Skills Academy, because at that time, Steph was actually one of the college counselors. Now, keep in mind, this is 2007, so this is before he became the Steph Curry that we all know, before he blew up on that national stage.
Was he still at Davidson?
He was at Davidson. Okay, yeah. This was even before he blew up in the NCAA tournament, where that kind of put him on the radar. And he lacked the physical stature. I mean, he looked like he was 14 years old, and he lacked the resume of the other college counselors there, because Davidson was a lower profile program. I mean, the college counselors that were at this camp were from Kentucky, from UNC, from Duke, and here's, you know, Davidson. But all of the coaches recognized there was something about Steph that was just different, and it was palpable. He was always the first player in the gym, laced up and going through kind of a pre-workout routine. He was always the last player to leave the gym, and we took notice of that. But the one that just absolutely blew my mind was at the end of the first workout, he tapped me on my shoulder and he said, "Coach, will you rebound for me? Because I don't leave the gym until I swish 5 free throws in a row." You know, for any of your viewers or listeners that have never shot a basketball, just know that's a really high standard. You know, a swish is a perfect shot.
If I get 5 in a week, I'd be happy.
Absolutely. And he wasn't going to leave until he did 5 perfect shots in a row, which means he could swish 4 in a row, hit a little bit of the rim on the 5th one. It would still go in. He'd still be mathematically perfect, 5 for 5, but that wasn't good enough for him. He'd start over. And if memory serves, I don't think it ever took him longer than 15 minutes to swish 5 in a row. And, you know, it's my assertion that he'll go down in history as the greatest shooter the game's ever seen. And and that story reminds me that it's not by accident, and it's not by luck. It's not even because his dad played in the NBA. It's because he's willing to hold himself to an unparalleled standard. And that's another message that I try and preach as often as possible, that the standards we set in our life, in every area of our life, as a spouse, as a parent, as a speaker, as a business owner, as an executive, the standards we set today ultimately determine who we'll be tomorrow. And the key to improving your performance is raising your standard of excellence.
I'm curious to know, you having worked with Kevin Durant and Steph Curry, how are they the same and how are they different? Because there's different there's different types of greatness.
Yeah.
Obviously, they're in the same field, the same industry, but how do they approach things differently?
Well, first, let me start with the similarities. There's three traits that I've noticed with all high performers in basketball and business and everything in between. The first was the lesson I learned from Kobe. They respect the process. They respect the fundamentals. They respect that you have to get in reps. Like, they understand that there's no quick fix to being excellent at anything. So they respect the fundamentals. Number two, they do a masterful job of blending confidence with humility. They earn the right to be confident because they put in the work during the unseen hours. You know, a guy like Stephen Curry, I can't fathom how many millions of shots he's made in empty gyms when no one is watching, you know, since he was a teenager. So he puts in that work to earn the right to be confident. But they also have a humility, and humility is what allows them to be coachable, what allows them to stay open to feedback. But most important, humility is what allows them to say, no matter how good I currently am, I can still get better. Like, even if you say I'm going to be the best shooter in the history of the game, I know I still can improve a little bit, and that takes humility. So they blend those together. And then the other thing is they have a strong appreciation for the process. They're very clear on the goals that they want to accomplish, but they understand that the way to do that is to focus on the steps. Don't focus on the goal, focus on the day-to-day. So a guy like Kevin Durant or Stephen Curry wakes up and says, what can I do today that's going to inch me closer to this massive goal that I have? And whether that massive goal is to win an NBA championship or to be the best shooter of all time or whatever it may be, all they focus on is, what can I do today? Well, I have a workout this morning. How can I perform this workout and with the focus and intensity that will get me a little bit closer to whatever that goal is? And that's something I've noticed amongst all high performers. Mm-hmm. Now, the difference is they also have the self-awareness to know where they're unique, to know how they operate best. You know, they've refined and they've tweaked and they've tried. So, you know, Kevin Durant's morning routine will be different than Stephen Curry's. But what they share is they both understand the importance of starting your day in a way that's going to set you up for success, but they don't try to carbon copy anybody else. And that was a part of my journey. When I was a younger coach, I was literally trying to carbon copy all of the coaches that I really admired. And then I realized I wasn't being authentic. Mm-hmm. I wasn't being myself. And I've learned that that's kind of a rite of passage in coaching. You do what you've seen, you do what you've been taught, and it takes a little time for you to figure that out. Same was true in speaking. It took me a couple years to really find my authentic voice. When I first started corporate speaking, I was doing kind of a poor man's impersonation of my favorite speakers, mm-hmm. you know, and I grew up, you know, Les Brown and Jim Rohn and Zig Ziglar and Brian Tracy, I mean, the legends, and I found myself quoting their quotes and using some of their mannerisms because I didn't know any better. And right. then it took a little while for me to find my authentic voice and kind of find my lane.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that is one of those interesting things about how you pull from so many different people. How do you feel like you raise your game when you're trying to get towards your goal? How often do you work with others? I know you say you have a coach, but you also have peers. What are some of the peers that you work with that you've learned from?
Well, the number one thing that I want from those around me is accountability. Mm-hmm. I want people keeping the spotlight on me so that I'm doing exactly what I said that I would do. And accountability is so powerful. And one thing that I've learned, and I tell this to my children all of the time, that holding someone accountable is something you do for them. It's not something you do to them. It doesn't always feel that way in the moment when someone's holding you accountable, but what they're doing is they're giving you a gift. I believe that holding someone accountable to a high standard of excellence is the best gift that you can give them, especially in a corporate structure. Teammates holding each other accountable, that's how you have high organizational performance. So I insulate myself with people that hold me to the highest standard in every area of my life. Mm-hmm. You know, I want to be the best father that I can be. I want to be the best member of my community. I want to be, you know, my physical wellness and health, I want to be as high as it can be. I want to be the best speaker and author that I'm capable of. And I rely on people to keep me in check. And if they don't think that I'm doing the best that I'm capable of, or when I say or do something that's not in alignment with that, which of course happens, I'm mm-hmm. fallible, I'm flawed, I say and do boneheaded things occasionally, I want people in my life to put me in check and hold me accountable. So that's the number one reason that I have coaches and mentors and an inner circle, is to hold me to that standard.
What's the best way to do that? Like, so is like Steph Curry being like, hey, I got up at 5 a.m. workout, and he's calling up a teammate, hey, in the offseason, hey, you need to do this, or you know, you've got somebody at work and you're like, hey, did you read the report before the meeting today? Like, what's the best way to keep other people accountable and do it in a successful, respectful way?
You just nailed it. And that's so insightful. You need to ask others to kind of be, and you use whatever terminology is natural to you. Can you be my accountability partner? Can we be each other's accountability partners? If you tell me there's an area of your life that you're trying to level up, could be physical, mental, emotional, spiritual, if that's appropriate to you, and you say, Alan, this is something I'm trying to improve, will you help encourage me? Will you help hold me accountable? You know, if you tell me that you're going to go for a 30-minute walk every single morning before you come into the office, then I'm going to check in with you every day and ask, mm-hmm. Brian, did you go for a walk this morning? Did you go inside or outside? How long did you walk for? Did you listen to something while you walk? Like, I'm going to check in with you. Mm-hmm. And that's going to help keep you committed to staying on that. And then in return, hopefully you'd be willing to do the same for me, whatever it was I was trying to level up. And you know, when you look at a typical corporate structure, when you can get teammates caring enough about each other that they hold each other accountable, like you just said, hey, did you read the report? Because you know we have a meeting this afternoon. That's what winning teams are made of. They are willing to have difficult conversations and confront the truth and hold each other accountable because they know that that shows that you care. Mm-hmm. And you know, we kind of started this conversation with why leaders need to show they care. Well, that's part of it. is holding your team to the highest level of accountability. You know, I used to tell players all the time at the high school level, you know, Coach Mike Jones was the coach at DeMatha when I was there, one of the most brilliant coaches I've ever been around. And, you know, players would sometimes feel a little discouraged if Coach Jones was what they considered being hard on them. And I said, look, don't worry about when Coach Jones yells at you. You worry the day he stops yelling at you, because that's the day he no longer cares. Yeah. That's the day your career at DeMatha will be done, is when he stops caring enough to hold you accountable. Mm-hmm. So you might not realize it now because you're 16 years old, but be thankful that someone cares enough to hold you to that standard. And and if we could all be as lucky to have a Coach Jones in our life.
Yeah. So one of the other things, too, that you talk about that's really good in applying it to the corporate world are sales. Like, you're very popular for sales groups. What are the unique things that you say that go toward a sales group towards their success?
So what I do is very similar to when I was in the basketball space. One of my primary jobs was to help players warm up, get their minds and their bodies prepared so that when practice started, they would be ready to contribute and compete at the highest level. So I never taught the skills of basketball. Our good mutual friend David Nurse did a brilliant job of teaching the skills of the game. So he and I were very complementary to each other. Well, it's the same thing in sales. I don't teach people how to sell or sales tactics. I know one of your previous guests, Phil Jones, good friend of mine, is masterful at that. What I do is I try and help folks improve the foundation to which they can apply sales techniques and tactics to be even better. Mm-hmm. And that is, like, how can you show up as your best self? You know, one of the things that I've learned from some really great sales professionals is that telling is not selling. That if you want to become a world-class sales professional, the skill you have to improve is something you do so masterfully, is the skill of listening. Mm-hmm. You have to be able to listen to that prospect. What are their needs? What are their challenges? What are their pain points? So you should never have to convince anyone to buy anything from you. If you have the right prospect and you're curious and fascinated enough to ask them the right questions, they'll come to the conclusion that your product or service is the right fit. Mm-hmm. So the skill of listening is a basic fundamental. The skill of learning how to ask insightful questions to qualify someone as the right fit is important. So those are some of the traits that I help folks work on so that when they adopt an actual sales strategy or sales technique, they're able to do that to a whole nother level.
Mm-hmm. One of the things too that I always like to ask people when I have them on here is, you know, what are those things that you have that you are passing on? I know you've talked about your kids a little bit. What are those things that you are most excited to pass on to them that you've learned from these greats?
Well, this one's very timely. So for context, I have 13-year-old twin sons who just started eighth grade, and I have an 11-year-old daughter who's in sixth grade. And all three of them play basketball. Uh-huh. And all three of them have told me that they have the goal of playing college basketball, which I've told them is a wonderful goal. But we had to have a real heart-to-heart the other day because I had to tell them, with all the love I have in my heart, that your current commitment level is not going to be good enough to play college basketball. Mm-hmm. So I told them one of two things either needs to change. Either you need to change your commitment level and start working on your craft every single day to give yourself a chance, or you need to change your goal. And you need to say, I don't want to play college basketball. I just want to play now because the game is fun. I love being with my friends. And I told them either one of those is fine. There's nothing wrong with you changing your goal and not wanting to play college basketball. Mm-hmm. But what I won't allow you to do is straddle in between the two worlds and say that you want to play college basketball, but not have that level of commitment. So the number one thing I try to pass on to my children and to every group I work with is your beliefs and your behaviors have to be in alignment. Mm-hmm. If not, you have to change one of them.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that is fascinating about how those things filter in. And what would you go back and tell your 13-year-old self if you could?
Well, the funniest part of this is no matter what I would have told my 13-year-old self, he wouldn't have listened because he was pretty hard-headed and he thought he knew everything. So the funny part is what I would have told my 13-year-old self is take a deep breath. It's okay not to know everything. Stay open to coaching. Stay open to learning. Stay open to mentors. Stay open to people that can pour into you. That, you know, it's funny because now I look back on my younger self and realize not only how much I didn't know then, mm-hmm. how much more I still need to know now. Now, I'm a firm believer that I'm only at about the halftime of my life. I plan to live to 100. I'm knocking on the door of 50 years old. So I plan to take everything that I've learned in this first 50 and apply it effectively to the second 50. And I've learned some really good lessons, and now I want to make the most of them.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Well, Alan, thank you so much for coming on and being a part of this. And for all those who are watching and listening, make sure to subscribe, rate, and review. Also go to premierspeakers.com and check out Alan Stein Jr. there. So Alan, thank you again so much for coming on.
Absolutely. This was so much fun. Thanks, Brian.
Thank you for joining us for the Beyond Speaking podcast. To learn more about today's guest, visit premierspeakers.com. Make sure to subscribe and leave a review wherever you listen.